This episode of the Topcast is proudly supported by Forte.
The interesting thing is I just branched out into the realm of colors with all my students recently in a fun way that I'll talk about in a minute. But it took me a long time to even think about putting colors on the page because it would feel so disruptive or confusing to me if the wrong color was on the wrong song. So I have not been drawn to those kind of methods or those kind of approaches just because they didn't mesh with my own synesthesia. I mean, we all know kids play in the key of C for months, if not years, when we start, right? So I wouldn't have been drawn for them to do all the colors of the rainbow with something that was just blue for me.
Tim Topham here, and welcome back to the Topcast from Top Music Co. This is episode number 295, and it's going to be of interest to you. If you've ever heard of synesthesia, which is most commonly understood as a sense of seeing colors when hearing sounds, but it actually goes much deeper than that. And we're going to unpack that with our Top Music Pro special guest today, Kelly Jenkins. She's one of our members and unpacks a little bit about some of her favorite aspects of membership, as well as talking in depth about this particular feature that some of your students may have. And indeed, she has herself. So in today's episode, we're going to unpack what synesthesia actually is. How can we find out if our students have it? How do we harness it, if so? But also, how can we use some of the learnings from this to students who don't potentially have this? And we go into a lot of depth on this one with our interview today. And this discussion also got me thinking more about learning styles more generally and paying attention to those from students. So we explore a little bit about learning styles too, and also unpack a few stories from Kelly's own experience. And you can find all the links to today's episode over at topmusic.co/episode295. My guest today, Kelly Jenkins, lives outside Boston, Massachusetts, where she teaches a hybrid studio of 62 students ages 4 to 74. Growing up, Kelly trained with a classical piano teacher through high school and then went on to study with a Van Cliburn finalist from the Cincinnati Conservatory. Teaching piano since 2007, Kelly enjoys improvising, creativity, and paying attention to each student's unique learning style to help each one develop their own gift of music. And while not teaching, Kelly can be found writing and arranging stage musicals with her lyricist slash co-writer, who also happens to be her awesome mum. How cool is that? Welcome to the show, Kelly. Great to see you.
It is so fun to be here. I've been looking forward to this.
Well, it's also great to have one of our Top Music Pro members on the show. It's been a while since I did a spotlight interview, and they're always heaps of fun. So I'd love to hear more about your experience inside our membership, but let's focus today on our main topic, which you actually proposed to me as a podcast, and it's all about synesthesia. Now, have I said that correctly?
Synesthesia.
Synesthesia. Now, I've heard lots about this, but I've never really understood it. And so you're going to help us understand it today. But what I did do is a tiny bit of research. I looked on Wikipedia and it said that synesthesia, I'm going to muck it up all day, is a perceptual phenomenon in which the stimulation of one sensory or cognitive pathway leads to involuntary experiences in a second sensory or cognitive pathway. Now, you're going to help us unpack what that actually means, particularly in the case of music, because this isn't just a musician's thing, from what I understand. This can be to do with numbers or words or letters and all sorts of things. So we're going to unpack that with you today. And the reason is because you actually have this condition. And I actually asked you, what should I call this? Is it a talent? Is it a disease? And you said, call it a condition. So let's just talk about your own little experience here. When did you realize that you had this? And tell me about the word that you used, the condition word.
Yeah, sure. I condition's general enough, we go with that. But I do think of it as a talent. And when I come across it in students, I tell them it's like a special ability. It's your brain works in a different way, but it's a great way, especially as a musician. So I didn't even know it was a thing until I was an adult. And like most of the synesthetes I've come across, if you have synesthesia, you are a synesthete. You're born with it. You don't choose it. You don't make it up. And you think that the rest of the world perceives the world the way you do, which most of us as kids, you know, we can only ever see through our own eyes. So we all think the world perceives, everyone perceives the world like us, right? So I was in a college level choir class and the conductor said, by the way, does anyone see this song or see songs in color? And I raised my hand, fully expecting the rest of
everyone
the class
to raise 16, their hands.
Yeah, everyone to raise their hands. And I was the only one. And so I kind of looked around and went, okay, I guess that's odd. Like put my hand back down and went along my merry way. Didn't think a lot about it. And years later, when I was already teaching, I was on a field trip with my piano students to a kids-focused symphony concert at our local symphony. And the conductor and presenter, who was doing an educational performance, not just playing the pieces, but explaining to the kids who the conductors and the composers were and all of that, he mentioned that the composer of this particular piece had synesthesia, which meant that they saw the pieces in color. And that was the moment as an adult piano teacher where it clicked for me and went, oh, this is a thing. So I got on Google and went and looked it up and found that actually there are quite a few synesthetes out there, especially within the creative realms, and that it shows up differently for pretty much for every different synesthete.
You actually have some stories about some of the famous synesthetes, which I want to hear in a moment. Is it a little bit like, I know it doesn't present as perfect pitch, but it's one of those things you either have it or you don't. And you kind of, you realize at some stage in your upbringing that you have it.
From what I understand, that's the case. The only one that was really interesting that said that people could develop synesthesia if they become blind later in life, then they might develop it because they had all this visual sensory information for a long period of their life. And if the visual is cut out because of not a born with blindness, but a blindness that comes on later, they can develop synesthesia. That was the only category I'd heard where you develop it. Otherwise, pretty much you have it or you don't. The best description I heard that if you don't have it, kind of how to picture it, somebody described it as the film Fantasia, either the Disney one, you know, from decades back, or they made one around 2000, where music comes across as images and as light and as pictures. So you had that experience in that film of someone saying, this is what this song looked like to me visually and colorfully. And that kind of happens unconsciously to synesthetes on one level or another.
Ah, that makes sense. That's a good analogy. So tell us about some of these famous synesthetes that you've read about.
So these ones are great. They span the gamut of history. We've got modern day ones like Pharrell Williams, who has done a lot of interviews about it. And he says it's essential to his work. He couldn't do it without. Lady Gaga, Billie Eilish, Alessia Caro, famous classical ones like Isaac Perlman, Leonard Bernstein, Duke Ellington, and Duke Ellington had really specific ways he would describe it, where he would say, okay, D is the dark blue burlap and G is a light blue satin. And as a synesthete, sometimes like they're that specific.
That's not just color. That's a fabric as well, or a feel.
Right. It's a color and a texture. So, so synesthesia, like you mentioned, can be a connection between any two senses. So I guess the most common one, even outside musicians, is letters appear as colors. That's very common for a lot of kids. Numbers can appear as colors. It's basically anything that's two different senses. The way it shows up on an MRI is if someone's in an MRI tube and they play music, the part of the brain that registers music and sound will light up like it does for anyone. And the part of the brain that sees color will also light up simultaneously. So it's two different senses firing off. Yeah. So back to our famous ones. I think probably my favorites are Franz Liszt was a very famous synesthete, as was Rimsky-Korsakov. And Liszt was very adamant. He would go to an entire orchestra when he was first conducting in Weimar and say, you're not playing it blue enough. It's got to be bluer.
Really?
Or you are playing it too violet. It's supposed to be rose and you're playing it violet.
And of course that means nothing to...
Nothing. No. Nothing to them. No. And these poor musicians are trying to understand what it is he's talking about. But one of the things that's interesting about synesthesia, and I've experienced it with my students, is it's completely individual to every single person. There is not a common thread of everyone sees this letter as this color, mm-hmm. or even the way they see it. So there's famous stories of Liszt and Rimsky-Korsakov arguing about it. And I can just imagine them saying, that D minor is so orange. And the other one's saying, no, it's not. It's a mustard yellow. How could you say it's orange? Because neither of them can control it. It's in their own head. But you feel very, very strongly about whatever color you see it as, because you can't unsee it. That's just the way it is in your own head.
Amazing. I'm learning so much, Kelly. I had no idea about any of this. And am I right in thinking that you, so for you, I don't know, a particular note on the piano will, if you shut your eyes, you will see a color, or if you see the note printed on music, it will look a color to you kind of on the printed page or not? Just it's kind of in your head.
So it's for me, it's mostly in my head, but it's also where it varies synesthete to synesthete. So my particular one, I see a key as a color. So C major, if I'm playing a song in C major, it's royal blue. And if I'm playing in G major, it's plum purple. And all the sharp keys are cool colors. Again, just in my head.
Cool, all the sharp keys, cold,
like, you mean? Yes, like cooler, yeah. Like blues to purples, more to cool geel tones. Mm-hmm. And then the flats, which are I like more, the flats are all warmer. They're oranges and reds and burnt ambers. And I actually can get in trouble if I miss a key change in the middle of the song. I will play a bunch of wrong notes because I am seeing the song in the wrong color. And I have not shifted to the new color if it's shifted to a key and I missed it.
Huh, how interesting.
Yeah.
This is kind of blowing my mind. I got to say, I'm so glad we're doing this. I've never explored this. I wish I could do a show of hands for people listening as to who might also have this. I hope you guys who are listening can, once you've listened to the episode, go online, find our social media channels, find the episode. It's topmusic.co/episode295 and leave a comment for us. Tell us, do you share any of these plum colors? And I'm interested. With Kelly, or is this all new to you as well? I'd love to know. Kelly, I notice also when you describe the colors, it's not just blue or yellow, it's royal blue and burnt yellow and things like that. Is that quite common too, that it's kind of specific?
It is very much. And especially I find among my students, at the moment, I mostly have preteens and teenagers that are the most vivid synesthetes. But statistically, it's anywhere between 1 and 5% of the population can be a synesthete, much higher percentage among musicians. I found in my studio over the years, and I usually average around 50 students at a time, I always have between 2 and 5 synesthetes within my own group of students.
How many on average?
So I usually have about 50 students at a given time, and 2 to 5 of those are synesthetes.
So, for most teachers, I think the average studio size is probably about 30. You could expect maybe one may have this. So I guess the next question is, how do we find out if our students have it? Because they may, like you, assume that everyone does this.
Yes.
I must say, in all my years of teaching, I've never known anyone to do this, but I've never known to ask if that's what we should do. So tell us, what should we do?
Yeah. All right. So you get to be the guinea pig, Tim. You get to be the student.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to pick your songs you've been working on with Fred Karpoff in your lesson.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So, Tim, I know you're working on your Scarlatti Sonata. When you're playing that, does it ever feel like a color or paint a scene or feel like a texture to you? Anything like that ever pop up when you're practicing?
It really doesn't.
That's cool. I was just curious. Every once in a while it does. But you know what's a fun thing to do? Does it have a mood or a scene that you could imagine that it might be? Are you the soundtrack for a particular moment that's happening?
Yeah, I do see some of my pieces as movie scenes, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Not that particular one, but I'm playing the Chopin Fantasy in F minor is one of my other pieces. And it has this very militaristic march section that comes twice through. And that, to me, I just instantly picture military drills. So I can see kind of, and other parts might be a chase or something like that. So that's, I do see that, but I assume that was fairly common for people playing.
Sure, because it has that spirit to it. you know a bit of the history about it, that Chopin was on those marches for that kind of situation. So that's usually the kind of conversation I have with a student to ask them.
It's just really open.
Yeah, it's very open. And if they say no, so I'll back up and say, if you ask that question, do you ever see a color or a texture or anything like that? You will get one of two very, very clear answers. Most of the time you'll get what your answer was, Tim. Nope, not really. And there's like blank look on their face. Yeah. At which point I pivot into something we'll talk about more in a minute of like, how can we just use our imagination around our music for expressive? So they don't feel like it's any kind of less than, I didn't answer the question right. This is something I should have been able to say yes to when Miss Kelly asked, but I couldn't. You know, there's nothing wrong if you're not a synesthete. But for those who are, they will give you this look of, well, yeah, of course, doesn't everyone? And right. Then I start diving in. Oh, cool. All right. So is there a color to a specific note in this song? Is there a color to a different section in the song? Tell me about it. And really, if you have a student who says their color, just let them go for it. Keep asking and encouraging. And they often will not be able to get their answers specific enough to satisfy themselves. Right. They will want, oh, it's really like a burnt mustard, but it's that kind of mustard out of that kind of jar on this particular kind of day, but it's not quite that color because it's so specific in their head. And they can't always, especially as kids, have the verbal skills or the breadth of nuanced color labeling. But a couple of my current synesthetes, one of them just loves D major because D major is just the most beautiful, warm, cozy brown ever. And every D on the piano just is the best color for her. Another one, his colors will morph and shift as he goes through the song. And an opening phrase will be reds and yellows if it's fiery, and then it will go into blues and greens as it gets more mellow. And then it might pick up and morph into something else. A third one I actually just discovered this week, a 14-year-old who will adamantly struggle with sections of the music. Just, I don't like this. I just don't like it. And I couldn't tell if it was just her being her, you know, semi-angsty 14-year-old self. And we finally got down to it. And there was a given measure that had harmonies in the right hand, which were not her favorite thing, because the top melody notes felt like they were bright, warm, red major, and the bottom harmony notes felt like they were blue minor, and the colors clashed in her head. And she didn't like the clash of colors. And we talked about, okay, is it possible in that particular measure for the blue and the red to make some purple that you could make a friend with, and maybe you could like the measure a little more? But mostly, if they say yes to the color question, I just ask them about it. And it's an ongoing conversation that pops up either when we start a new piece or when they're polishing a piece and they really have their expression set. And I equate it a lot to them talking about these colors as the same thing we do with kids when we validate their feelings, where a kid might be angsty or happy or confused. And if an adult can come along and just say, that feels really confusing, doesn't it? Yes. Yes. Thank you for giving a label to it. Or you're just so excited you could jump out of your skin and that's why you just can't stop talking. Yes, I am. Or this feels so sad and disappointing. And we've all done that as any kind of nurturing adult to our children, to our students, and just see their like, oh, that breath of relief that someone could help them label something they didn't have language for. If you can help your student at all label or outwardly express their colors, it's the same kind of relief to them that they get to share what's in their brain with someone else.
Right. So for a non-synesthete, as I am, and many listeners will be, what you're saying is if you find a student that does have this talent, condition, then just go with it. Talk about it. Let them explore it. You could indeed, I guess, there's no harm in if they don't already know, saying, I have a feeling that you might have this amazing ability. Why don't you have an explorer? You can have a look online about it. Let their parents know, I guess, as well, because it's kind of exciting. So it's about being open and excited about it. And I think it's quite instructive what you said about that challenge that child had in a particular passage. And I wonder if you did know that a student had this, then you could be more aware of challenges in music, maybe being related to colors that you would never have thought in a million years otherwise. And if you never gave them the opportunity to ask about it, they perhaps wouldn't know either. So I think it's really just about a conversation, just opening up the channels of communication.
100%. And I always tell them when I dress it and get them to talk about their color, guess what? I think you have this special giftedness called synesthesia. You're a synesthete. And their eyes can kind of go wide, like, did you just say I have a disease? It's like, no, this isn't a disease. This is something exciting. Your brain is made so you connect more senses that aren't always connected for different people. And I spell it out for them. I'll write it down on their homework, you know, tell their parents about it. Feel free to have a Google about this. I don't have any particular like favorite resources that I can send kids home with. More just look it up and see what you find, with parents' permission, of course. And the point that you made about helping kids over tough spots, I think could possibly be one of the most helpful parts of identifying this in a student. Because one of my teenagers that has like very vivid swaths of color that go through a piece, he had started the Cantina Band from Star Wars maybe a year ago.
Right.
And we all know classic and love that check. One. Do, yeah. do, 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 right?
Yep.
Exactly. He had already done some John Williams pieces before. It was well within his sight reading range. He had one phrase he just couldn't get over. And we kept reworking it and we refigured the fingering and we took it like all the steps, hands separate, hands together, fast, slow, in context, out of context, the whole bit. And I finally just said, okay, tell me about the colors for this particular two bars. And he was like, they just clash. They are so angry and clashing in my head. I can't get over them. And I said, all right, we're going to move on to another piece because this is just not fun for you.
We're not going to get there. And you,
we're not going to get there. And you just don't care about Cantina Band that much. Let's find something where the colors just don't make your head hurt quite so much. And that was the solution for him, is it was just the colors that for whatever reason, really, really got in the way for him.
I would never have thought about this in a million years, Kelly. This is truly, I mean, this is, I was just saying before we hit record, I'm almost at 300 podcasts and you're really kind of blowing my mind. I'd never thought about this. I hope that teachers, after you've listened to this, you know, go and start speaking to some of your students. Ask, just listen back to what Kelly asked me and try it out with your students. I'd be fascinated to know how this impacts teachers in their studios.
I love your idea, Tim, about putting comments at the bottom of this podcast, putting comments on the Top Music Facebook page. I think it would be great to see what other teachers out there have experienced this themselves, conversations they have with their students. And I would love to follow it along and just cheer on other students and other teachers that are braving a new ideas to explore. I think it might be more rewarding than you know.
One thing that did come up, I want to come back to the students who don't have this and how we could use colors potentially or not. I don't know what your advice is going to be. But one thing I do know is that there are some methods out there. I know the music color method, for example, Andrew has been on the podcast a few years ago actually now, that use colors associated with notes. And my assumption now, having spoken to you, is that they were probably made by a synesthete of some sort or someone with this knowledge. Have you seen any connection between those methods that use color association with notes working or not working with people with this?
The interesting thing is I just branched out into the realm of colors with all my students recently in a fun way that I'll talk about in a minute. But it took me a long time to even think about putting colors on the page because it would feel so disruptive or confusing to me if the wrong color was on the wrong song. So I have not been drawn to those kind of methods or those kind of approaches just because they didn't mesh with my own synesthesia. I mean, we all know kids play in the key of C for months, if not years, when we start, right? So I wouldn't have been drawn for them to do all the colors of the rainbow with something that was just blue for me.
I see.
You know, not that I would teach just what was comfortable for me, but because I have enough synesthetes, I wasn't necessarily thinking about that. But I've actually stumbled on something recently, transitioning into your question of, you mentioned what, how colors can work with non-synesthete students. I have been one of the many, many amazing things I've taken from Top Music was exposure to resources that I was craving for the last few years and finding like the perfect resources for me. And I know we're going to get to that conversation later. Listeners, I have so many things about Top Music I could say. We will get there. But one of them was that I hadn't found a method that really worked for me that incorporated the kind of creativity and innovation and composing and other things that I wanted until through Top Music, I found Piano Safari in the last year. And I absolutely love it. For me, I felt like Catherine and Julie like got in my brain and wrote the like dream curriculum that I would have wanted to write myself. So one of the things that I just started doing recently was taking the advice that's in early Piano Safari suggestions of right hand red circles the treble clefs when the kids first learn notation and left hand light blue circles the bass clefs. Again, wouldn't have thought of this before because my colors, myself, and synesthetic students were so tied. But I thought, you know what? Let's give it a try. So we got a bunch of red treble clefs going. We got a bunch of light blue bass clefs going. The kids get to pick their own color for whatever their own new interval is. They mark all of their thirds in one color, or they mark their fifths, or whatever the new concept is. And they have absolutely loved it. They eat it up. And having these colors on the score, which as we know, it's a whole new language for them to learn when, especially at 6 and 7, they're just getting fluent at reading whatever their own language is, you know, usually English for most of us around here. So for them to be able to mark up the score in colors and choose their own colors to mark it up, that has been a really fun way to use color when it's completely unconnected to synesthesia. Another win with color for a much more advanced student I just stumbled on was an adult who has really been working on her rubato and her expression. And she is learning the Chopin E-flat Nocturne, which we all know and love, right? And the heart and soul of that piece is the rubato in that piece, right? You can't play that. If you play that song right strictly to the beat, you instantly hear something's wrong. And she was really struggling finding her own natural rubato. And I wanted her to explore it and not, I didn't want to micromanage it, but I could tell she needed a little bit of support, kind of some training wheels to get started. So I let her pick three colors and we literally marked the notes that she would speed up a little bit and the notes that she would slow down a bit and the notes she would keep a steady beat. And she went through and marked her score and the colors actually helped her with her rubato. And she played it again and it clicked. The whole song came alive. And the colors had actually helped her just see things that she wanted to put in. And she analyzed beforehand and then the expression showed up with the reminders.
Did she choose red, orange, and green for go slow, stay steady?
She did. And I have to say, I had to just let her go with it because green was actually going slow or stopping and red was going fast. And it felt backwards to me as a driver. It was like, I think red is when we stop and green is when we go. But again, I let her pick her colors and it worked for her. So we went with it.
And just going back to the Piano Safari example, you said they had fun with the colors. And I mean, kids love marking up scores and all that. But did it help them recognize, do you think? So if all the perfect fifths were marked in yellow or whatever it was, do you feel it actually helped them recognize it faster in the music?
Dramatically faster, especially because the way that that Julie and Catherine suggest doing it is they only mark what the new interval is, and then they quote graduate off marking whatever their previous intervals are whenever they add a new one. So it's not that they're marking every single interval; they're just marking what's brand new. So I happened to pick it up with a bunch of first year students who were getting pretty confident seeing their seconds, and then they were learning to see their thirds, and they were missing thirds left and right. And even though we talk about line to line or space to space, they just weren't seeing it. But when they could take their time and prep their score before they played it and go, oh yeah, that is a skip. Okay. Oh, look, I'm making a mountain with my green pencil because my skips are going up and down and up and down. Then when they went to play it, it was so much faster because they were following the green up and down. And then by the time they'll get to this on the next one, and then they won't mark their thirds anymore when they get to their perfect fifths, I think they'll have gotten their thirds solidly enough in their brain, and then they'll be ready for the next one.
Right. I love mm-hmm. this as an idea. I hope people listening are like, well, I mean, there's no harm in trying this out with any of your students. Because I'm obviously planning with a student what they're going to do before they actually start learning the piece. So let's have a look through it. Can you find patterns? Can you find the shapes and intervals that you know? And I've had students circle things before, but not necessarily use colors. And so in the case of this, you're not – so let's say it's an interval played together of a third. Would you be circling the thirds with a green circle or a line above it or highlighting over the top of it? Or does it not really matter?
You could pick. What I happen to do so far is they put a diagonal line between the melodic thirds so they can see the rise or fall, and then they circle the harmonic thirds.
Yeah, great.
You know, you could put a highlight over it. You could put an arrow to it, whatever you wanted. But it's the same color as the melodic thirds so that they still go, okay, that's a third. I'm just playing it together or I'm playing it separate.
Forte is a free alternative to Zoom, purpose-built for music teachers. Forte puts you and your teaching style at the center of the educational experience. In particular, Forte offers industry-leading audio quality. This is what Zoom sounds like. Now listen to the same music recorded on Forte using the same equipment. Our mission is to empower teachers to do their best teaching online. Sign up for free and start teaching your students on Forte today. Just go to fortelessons.com. That's FORTELESSONS.com.
Wonderful. What great ideas. Thank you so much for sharing that, Kelly. So thinking about this and talking to you today makes me think about learning styles, because as a trained teacher, we learn lots about learning styles and that, you know, students can be visual or auditory and kinesthetic and all of those things. And I know there's also been some people who've debunked this. I'm still for it, because I really do. If I have something complex, I'll draw it. I'll write it down. I think I'm visual. And I guess we're quite lucky being one-on-one teachers often. Most of us teach one-on-one, that we can completely tailor our lessons with students. We don't have a classroom of 30. So we do have that luxury. So what have you learned about paying attention to students' learning styles from this experience? I know you had some thoughts on that.
I have found that I absolutely love the one-on-one experience. And from doing some classroom teaching earlier in my teaching career, I wouldn't trade it. And for me personally, I haven't even been drawn to doing group piano lessons, even though I do that sometimes if I have like a sibling group who have piano student lessons back to back. But, and it might be something I explore later. I know some people love it, but I absolutely love the custom tailoring every single lesson to that child, that teen, that adult, for where they are in that day, as well as in their entire, you know, musical journey. So I have found that keeping, this is again a piano safari thing, they say it clearly, if you keep the four things that I believe most top music teachers going, which is reading, rote, technique, and improv, if I'm touching on all four of those on a consistent basis, then I'll get to know which one my student most naturally is drawn to, and then that will help me clue into how they learn most organically. Doesn't mean we're not going to do all the other things, but if I have someone who loves their rote pieces and just hits the rhythm really strong on there, they're probably more of a kinesthetic learner and they love hands-on. And they're going to like tapping out the beat of their song on a drum or on the piano before they start. And some who just love to read and maybe even love to mark up their scores, they're very visual and they want their score to be just right. Every once in a while, I come across visual ones who don't want their score touched. They would never, I can't even put a pencil line to say, play the first two systems and stop. Must be perceived. You know, the audio ones, they really, really need a audio track or a video of me playing it pretty much every piece until they get to a really comfortable reading level. because they need that audio stimulation to know. And so just paying attention to what they gravitate toward, and then also paying attention to what they resist, might be where they need to grow. So I have a couple little ones who have really, really some dexterity issues and some real weakness in their fingers. And keeping any kind of steady rhythm with any kind of good hand posture is a struggle for them. So I make up lots of extra games and squeeze balls and extra rhythm, off the bench rhythm games and things like that, because that's not their natural bent, but I want to help them in that when we're going to do it in a fun way. So one of my favorite, I have to say though, one of my favorite experiences of teaching someone to a specific learning style was a really, really beloved student of mine that I started about 4, maybe 5 years ago now. I was teaching William from scratch. He was just starting from the beginning, as well as several of his siblings. And I had taught the siblings their first lessons, and they were going over some basics. They're getting it. We maybe were looking at the page for one start, couple starting notes. And William was the last in the first day. And I started it just like with all of his siblings. Great. You've been listening in. We're going to take off. And the notes on the page for that first day and for the first few days didn't compute really at all. And the different ways I've been used to explaining them for, I was probably, I don't know, 12 or 15 years into teaching at this point, was not making sense with his brain. And talking to mom later, I found that we were dealing with both dyslexia and dyscalculia, which is dyslexia with numbers. And that translated over to music. So I went, okay, we're going to figure out something else that will work, because what was really, really clear from the beginning was that William was incredibly creative. He had notebooks and file boxes full of stories that he had written. And he wouldn't just write a story. He had entire graphic novel style illustrations and maps of the world created around all these characters. And music was something that he wanted to express. So I scrapped all the beginning material I had, and we wrote his own music. For the first 3.5 years, he wrote music. He wrote music about Nebuchadnezzar from the Bible, and he wrote music about the French Revolution and about the fauns in the wood. And he wrote. Often he would bring me entire sets of lyrics, and then he would explore on the piano and find sounds. Sometimes he would just explore and find sounds, and I would notate them down. And then step by step, I would say, oh, you just played this. This is what it looks like when I write it down. Now I just want you to trace this and put that on the music. And then as he kept going and he kept writing, I would have him notate a little more and notate a little more. Oh, you want that note to be long? Let's leave it empty with a stem when it's longer. That one's short. Let's fill it in black. Oh, they're really short. We're going to make them two friends. We're going to connect them by a bar at the top. And step by step, we actually went through how to read music by him creating. And after the first about 3 years, he'd written 4 volumes of music. Each volume was about 10 to 14 pieces. I typed them all into Sibelius, and the parents and I got them bound. So it had the original, his handwritten copy, and the Sibelius, like a formally printed copy. So he now has 4 spiral bound volumes of his original works. And at this point now, he is comfortably reading music, and he loves picking up late elementary pieces and learning late elementary pieces and putting all the expression and all the fun stuff into them, because we reverse engineered it and learned it backwards, and it worked for him.
How old was he when he started?
9.
9. So 9, 10, 11, 12-ish.
Yep.
It just reminds me, Kelly, of how important it is that we put our students first, and we have a student-centered approach to our teaching. It's one of our core philosophies at Top Music, as you know well. You've got to meet students where they're at. And if you had taught him in the way you taught all his siblings quite happily, he may well have quit and just given up. And that's so sad for me to think that he could have not had this incredible experience that he's had over these 3 years and develop these. I mean, he'll have those volumes. He'll look back on them when he's 50 and go and show his kids this music that he made. I think that's just remarkable. So, well, congratulations, because that would have put you outside your comfort zone, I imagine, like it would for many teachers, teaching that amount of composition and then teaching reading backwards from writing. You're obviously quite a remarkable teacher. So thank you for sharing that story. I would love to find out a little bit more about your experience as a Top Music Pro member, because you mentioned that at the start. And in fact, I was just having a look back. You joined us on a monthly plan. You've been a member for about a year. And then more recently, you upgraded to an annual plan. I thought, ooh, I'd love to ask you, what made you change? And yeah, tell us a little bit about your experience.
It has been, I think I can say, it's been probably the single best thing I've ever done for my studio, joining Top Music. And it came at a time when I was hungry to find this kind of community. So I started on the annual plan when, and I'll tell a little bit of my starting story, how I found it. And then I was going through one of the webinars. I don't even remember which webinar it was last year. And it was one of those, all right, if you're one of the first webinar people, or here's the promo from the webinar, here's the special deal to switch to an annual plan. And by that point, it was clear. It was like, well, this is part of my studio for forever. So it was a no-brainer. It was that. This just actually made it more efficient and saved me some money every year, because I will be part of this. So I might as well switch to annual. And I get a deal out of it too. That's great. Yeah.
So what can you take us back to before you connected with us? What were some of the struggles and worries and feelings, or what were you missing perhaps that we were able to help you with?
So I had probably been teaching about 13 years before I found Top Music. And I have always liked to teach out of the box. I like to teach creative. You know, I started William on those projects, and I've worked with Synethetes and other things. But I hadn't met in my local circle, I hadn't met teachers that I felt like taught like me. I felt like I just came across teachers, like most of our stories that I'd grown up with, which was pretty traditional. Not a lot of improvising, not a lot of, you know, creating, a little bit of arranging, but I wasn't inclined to go to some other teachers that I knew and brainstorm or talk things out with them, because I didn't feel like they were coming at things from the same place I was. So I knew Paula Dreyer through my brother, and I went to Paula's first online Piano Connect conference January of 2021, and you were one of the presenters, Tim. And my jaw just dropped for 2.5 days. I was like, these are my people. This is what I've been looking for. So I finished the conference and followed you on social media. I followed Bradley, followed Lila Viss, and just was eating up all this world that I didn't know existed online, that I wasn't finding locally. There are other people out there who are doing this. And so I just started inhaling Top Music podcasts graciously. And after a few in, it was like, well, this is a done deal. I'm going to sign up, because these are clearly what I'm looking for. I need like-minded people. I need somewhere to ask questions. I need resources and ways to help me do what I want to do, what I'm already doing, but I'm spending a lot of work doing it.
Right. So yeah, time saving. And also we have a lot of members that come in and say, oh, I needed the confirmation that what I was doing was okay, that I'm not some crazy, and it's all right to do what you did, i.e. teach someone composing for 3 years before they learn to read. I remember the amazing Forrest Kinney telling me about one of his students that he taught for 3 years who only wanted to learn the Beatles, and that was it. And he did it for 3 years. And then eventually the student wanted to learn some other things. It's amazing how if you do attract them at the start and you meet them where they're at, that you can keep them going. And you've obviously done that so well with so many students. So what have been some of the positive outcomes of being a member?
Oh my goodness, there are so many. I think the top one is just personally, I feel like I am so supported that I have all these resources at my fingertips at any given time. I now have the ideal method that I like. I have composers that I know about. I have music that's easy to access. I have so many courses that I'll go through. And I just now feel supported, like you said, to do what I wanted to do. And dozens of times going, oh, I do that. I'm so glad to know it's okay to do that. And to like have an official label often for what I was doing. And so I feel like it sent me back into teaching way more energized, more equipped, more empowered to do more of what I wanted to do.
And that's coming from someone with 13 years experience and doing a great job already. So it's wonderful to hear that we've been able to take you to another level as well. Have you got a couple of favorite resources you could mention?
I do. So I have to say, so far, I've probably used the courses the most. I finished 9 of the courses. I have 6 more I'm going through.
Wow.
And every one of them, I mean, even just recently, like Noah Kageyama's practicing course, incredible. Oh, that's short, been a game changer.
Short and it's like 4 modules and it's a winner.
Oh my goodness. Any members who out there who have not gone through that, jump on it now. It will change your life. I was looking for a technique. Again, like many of us, I didn't get good technique training growing up. So I wanted to do it right. Took the technique class, and that's how I came across Julie teaching the Piano Safari animal techniques. And then that opened the doors to like exploring Piano Safari more and going, and it was through actually the podcast you did with them years ago, listening to that one. I switched all my entire studio of 60 students, all of them onto Piano Safari.
Wow.
And it was everything from Piano Safari Friends for the 3-year-olds up to the adults for my 70-year-olds and everybody in between. I had a kid who just finished her freshman year of high school and was so excited that she got the one coveted spot on the high school jazz band. And I went through Bradley's prepping a kid for jazz band class. And that's been our curriculum for this whole summer, is the handout Bradley created with that class for my ongoing sophomore. Both of your notebook beginners, the one that you did and the one that Nicola did, every first time lesson plays an animal improv from the low end to the high end, first day, every time. So I love the classes. I love the top music sheets. I think I'm up to like 15 now with a couple bonuses. Gerald Simons this month was just so much fun.
So top music sheets, for people listening who don't know, that's our monthly free sheet music that we give all our members, studio license pack of amazing sheet music from composers around
amazing.
The world.
It's really amazing great. Sheet music. The discounts, I mean, the fact that we get 20% off music notes alone, I just have it like bookmarked and I put that in music notes several times a month. And I mean, the membership alone would be worth it just for the forums. Being able to go and like talk about a brainstorming thing, a pain point, those things that I didn't have a local teacher to brainstorm with, I can go on the forums anytime and feel like I've got a community of people that will pitch in and give ideas, the resident expert teachers that are there, and all the rest of the community. It's just so, so welcoming. One of my specific questions sometime last year was about developing rhythm in students, like getting in their bodies. And somebody said, try Wendy Stevens' Rhythm Menagerie and Rhythm Cups. And I not only love Rhythm Cups, all my kids love them. I do a group Rhythm Cup event at every recital for the entire audience. And Wendy's one of my favorite modern composers. I think I had 23 Wendy pieces in my summer recitals. So again, just feeling equipped from things that I found from top music has been amazing.
We love, you know, I do enjoy building networks and sharing those networks that I have with all our members. So it's wonderful to hear that you've made those connections. Thanks so much for sharing those, Kelly. It's wonderful. It's heartwarming, honestly, that to hear the kind of impact that it's had. So I do hope others listening will consider it. And I wonder, is there anything you would say to the people listening who may not be a member, they may not have taken the leap yet? Any little comment before we wrap things up?
Anybody who is listening to this podcast, you've got a curiosity for being a creator. There's part of you or all of you in your whole studio that is already a top music teacher, just for the fact that you're here and you sat through the last 45 minutes of synesthesia and creative talking, besides however many other podcast episodes like myself that you've listened to. But none of us as a pro have to know everything all the time. And we don't have to come up with all the answers. And part of being a pro is knowing when you need a community to reach out to. And you truly, I don't believe you can find a better worldwide community than top music for educating yourself further, for growing your business, for not feeling alone, for feeling equipped, for doing what you want to do. I talk about it with all my piano teacher friends constantly. My family is sick of me singing the praises of top music, if that'd be possible. So if you haven't made the leap, just know it could possibly be the best thing you ever do for yourself and your students.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much, Kelly. I really appreciate that. I have a feeling there may be some people listening who might want to connect with you. Are you on socials and things? Can people reach out somewhere?
You know what? I'm not, just because I don't have a website. I've got 61 students in a waiting list, so I have not had to build a site to look for more.
We could unpack the fact that you have 61 students in another episode, because I didn't want to say anything, but that is a heap of students. My goodness.
Keeps him busy. but I show up on the forums. I don't know if you can search people on the forums.
If you want to connect with Kelly, come and join us inside Top Music Pro. We can start a thread to talk about this.
Absolutely. And I'm in the Top Music Facebook group. If there's a way to search people in there, or just start at Synesthesia One, I follow that. I would love to chat with anybody who has questions or help anyone brainstorm what to do with their own synesthes. So put something either in the Facebook group or on the forums and tag me if you can find me. And I would love to say hi.
That's so cool. Thank you very much, Kelly. I've learned a heap. It's been so much fun. And let's keep the conversation going on socials, everybody, or over at topmusic.co/episode295 if you want to leave a comment on this particular episode. Kelly, have a great day and we'll keep in touch.
Thanks so much. It's been great.
Well, that's the end of the show this week. I do hope you enjoyed our discussion. It's opened your eyes to a completely potentially new aspect of music learning. It certainly was really new to me and I learned a heap in this episode. If you've got any questions at all, then head over to our show notes where you can also find links to anything you might have heard today. It's over at topmusic.co/episode295. Next week on the podcast, we're going to be unpacking a real challenge for any of you who might be hiring or looking to hire music teachers at the moment for your own studio. And I know there's many of you in that situation where you've got such a waiting list that it actually makes sense to hire someone else to start teaching some of your students for you. But the challenge right now is that there's an employment shortage. So we're going to be working with the amazing Dave Simon from the Music Lessons and Marketing Podcast to unpack some solutions to this dilemma at the moment. I'm Tim Topham and you've been listening to The Topcast. I'll speak to you next week. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.